All right. Number seven, 2014 legislative proposals briefing with Ann Larson.
Hey guys, getting my materials handed to you right now. I'll just wait for a minute. But for the record, I'm Ann Larson, your legislative liaison for our new folks. Nice to meet you. There's another one. Does everyone have everything?
Yeah? Yes.
Okay. So today we're going to talk about the 2014 legislative agency request that we'll submit to the governor here later this fall. Oops. So just kind of looking at a timeline, we've already had this in front of the director's office. We've also had EMT review the different proposals that I'm going to go over here in just a little bit. Today, this is for the Fish and Wildlife Commission review. And then similar to the budget request, you'll be approving our agency request package in 2 weeks on August 16th. On September 15th, we need to submit these to OFM and the governor's process if they have fiscal impacts. Oh, excuse me, there's a mistypo here. It should be October 1st without fiscal impacts. So just to give a context for the 2014 session, it is a 60-day short session. I say short in quotes because even the long session, I can't believe it was almost 6 months. If you think about it, we actually finished last session on June 29th. So we had already started to develop 2014 packages while we were still in our 2013 legislative session. It was a grueling year. I'm glad it's over. I think we had a lot of successes, both legislatively, operating budget, as well as capital. But I'm looking forward to be past that and moving on to the next one. It is a supplemental budget year, as Owen mentioned. And then also something to keep in mind is any bill that didn't make it past this last legislative session gets retained and it will carry over. So good bills, bad bills, things that we're working hard not to have, things that we're working to have, they're all going to be and at play next session too. So after a lot of EMT review, we've narrowed, I don't know, I think it was 10 or 12 proposals down to 5. It's a pretty aggressive package again this year, given that it is a short session, but it's going to be an invasive species proposal, background checks, enforcement omnibus, wildlife conflict accounts, as well as hunter education. So three of these are actually going to look familiar to you. Invasive species came in front of you last year, as well as background checks. We didn't run those as agency request legislation. And then hunter education was one of our bills that we did run. We were not successful during the 2013 session, and we're going to probably be dropping a new bill with some changes to that. So I'm going to go over each bill just briefly and at the very end just allow for a little bit of question. I know you all have a pretty big 140-page package. I know you've read it in its entirety, but it has all the bill language. So the first bill that we've got is on page 4 through 74 of that large package. You should also have a fact sheet in front of you now. And what it is, it's going to be about invasive species. Invasive species pose an ongoing threat for our economy. The spread could cost actually hundreds of millions of dollars to the state. And then we've noticed that we've got regulatory gaps in our current authorities that put us at risk. And we also have current statutes that are scattered throughout Title 77. So you recall we talked a little bit about this last session. So the proposal is actually based on a joint recommendation that's coming from the Washington Invasive Species Council. And if you recall, that council is through RCW and has folks like Puget Sound Partnership on it, Department of Ecology, DNR. We're actually represented on that as well through Bill Twight. So there's a lot of the state family that's on that council. The bill is going to be a three-part bill. It includes a management section, an enforcement section, and then technical provisions like things that we're removing. And then we've also been working on this for 3 years. This has probably been a bill that I've seen in front of my entire legislative career with Fish and Wildlife through the entire time. So it's had a lot of work going into it. So what we're proposing is a solution. The highlights include consolidation of current invasive species statutes into a single statute. Like I said, they're scattered throughout the title. We're also trying to improve for actions for rapid response. We're also trying to improve inspection program by permitting non-law enforcement officers to operate our AIS check stations. And then finally, improving our classification system to strongly link classification to the management actions. So I didn't include any funding pieces on these bills, but I'll talk a little bit about those. I know Owen didn't cover that. We're going to let me kind of do it. A lot of this – oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Commissioner Smith.
Thank you. How would this work, Ann, with local initiatives? I'm thinking like in Lake Whatcom and
right.
Whatcom County, you know, the county council has approved a check station.
Right. Well, part of this, we've identified a funding need of about $3 million, and that's on a yearly basis. So getting to the point that you have, $500,000 of that would be identified as local grants that we would work with the locals to kind of help with that. So you're right. They have right now, I think it's $50 for Lake Washington for their AS. So this money would help so we wouldn't have these redundant fees that they're paying.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the industry that I'm part of, I've been contacted recently by some people that are common carriers that transport equipment and boats into Washington State. And I've asked them to write a letter regarding their concerns, but I'll bring it up being you've got it on the screen.
Sure.
Apparently Washington State is one, at least one state, most all of them have at the point of entries have pressure washing equipment. If a boat comes in from another state and it has invasive species, zebra mussels or any other thing on its hull, they wash it on site, so mm-hmm. it doesn't end up going into one of the bodies of water in our state. I just throw that out to I'm not sure who, but I know it's going to be brought forward and it's going to be an expense item that's probably going to become mandatory, so I want you to be aware. We can talk more about it later if
okay.
you'd like, but I know there's some pressure growing.
Okay. So some of the user fee options right now include recreational watercraft fees, and this would be on both recreational and for residents and non-residents, commercial watercraft fees, conveyance fees on both commercial and recreational. And I think there's some recognition right now that we should have a component, and we'll probably be asking for general fund. Not completely, but there's kind of that fair share. Folks are wondering what's that fair equation of how things should be paid. General fund, there's a broad general or public benefit, so there should be some general fund component to that as well. But it shouldn't be borne completely by the recreational boaters. Right now, they are the ones that are contributing to our current AIS program. So what we're doing, I attended one last week, but we're having four stakeholder meetings that are pretty by invitation only, but in Olympia, Wenatchee, Bellingham, and Spokane, kind of talking about the ins and outs of the bill, kind of discussing the funding mechanisms that we have out there. I think what we want to do is get the feedback from the folks that are going to be impacted by this, what they think is the right combination of fees and what should be the best thing that we're using to pay for this, knowing that we have about a $3 million need out there. And that $3 million need includes not just the invasive species program through FISH, but also the enforcement as well. So again, this bill doesn't have the financial piece to it, the funding piece, and I don't know if we'll have that in 2 weeks as well, but it's something that we're just doing this long stakeholder process to make sure that we have that right combination, and I'll keep you guys posted as we know more on the funding.
Anne?
Yeah.
The rapid response element makes a lot of sense to me. Having been involved with Spartina eradication for about 20 years, it was started during a time when there wasn't as much awareness of the risks of invasive species. Okay. Now we know, we understand much better, but there were also during those years a lot of difficulty in interagency coordination. And I'm wondering, this recommendation from the Invasive Species Council, which is inherently interagency,
right.
Asks for authorities that would be in our code and implemented by our officers,
right.
And there would be no problems with the interagency coordination, cooperation, compatibility because of everyone in agreement now, this would work better? Is that the idea?
Well, and I'll check specifically with Alan, and I'll get back to you on the specifics of how the interagency coordination, if they're, how that's going to work. But it's coming through recommendations through different reports from that Invasive Species Council.
It's a great idea. I just don't know how the mechanism would work, and pretty interesting. Okay.
So another thing with this, invasive species aren't just aquatic, and you'll notice that the majority of this bill deals with invasive species in the aquatic environment. What we've done is provided a framework that the bill has to do with invasive species as a whole, but it focuses primarily on aquatic, but we've got those places where we can plug in terrestrial at a later date once we've got the framework in place. It's just too big of a load to lift both the aquatic and terrestrial plus the funding components. So I would say, you know, in a year or two, imagine we'll have some terrestrial invasive species bill coming back to the commission for your review. And then another item, if you recall, we had 5702, which was sponsored by Senator Honeyford this last year during the 2013 session. It passed. There's a lot of great momentum and energy towards moving invasive species, a bigger bill, and getting some good funding forward. So I'm actually really excited. This product, like I said, 3 years in the works, a lot of legislative interest on that. Folks are really recognizing that this is a huge threat for the state of Washington and how much money it could cost the state. So it's good to see that there's a lot of interest towards this. It's a really good time to move this legislation forward. So our next bill, this one we had again last year, it's a good little bill. What currently we have, Fish and Wildlife lacks the authority to do background checks on certain individuals. And what this is, it provides, it's actually a risk both to public safety and to liability. And what we're proposing is that Fish and Wildlife can do background checks on certain employees and volunteers, and those would be individuals who have access to criminal history and sensitive data, kind of through like our enforcement, if they've been issued a firearm, and these would be some of like the biologists that are issued a firearm working in the field, and then also have access to children or vulnerable adults. So there is also a fiscal impact on this. It's very small. It's a negative fiscal impact, $2,600 for fiscal year 14, $1,300 each additional year, and that's for actually charging, I think it's like $10 for the background check itself. So any questions on this one? No? So our third package is on pages 81 through 125. Again, it's one of the larger bills that we have coming before the as a proposal for the legislature. And again, we each couple years we run an enforcement omnibus bill, which is a large bill that deals with a lot of technical changes, or if we've got, for example, we have some insufficient penalties for certain activities that threaten our fish and wildlife. So we're looking at another about 40-page bill that deals with a lot of the enforcement provisions. So what we're looking to do is statutory changes in Title 7 or RCW 7708, 7715, which is the enforcement, and 7732, but these are all enforcement related. Highlights to this bill include increasing the penalties for taking certain fish, endangered or protected fish. So right now for the penalty would be for green or white sturgeon, $2,000. And then for wild salmon or steelhead, which are protected, it would be a $500 penalty for those particular species to take those. Another one would be increasing penalties for coming too close to feeding southern resident whales, our orca whale population. Right now it's only $42, and we're looking at increasing that to $500. If you recall, this was not an agency request bill, but Senator Ranker sponsored a bill that was very similar to this, and we've just included this into our enforcement omnibus bill. Another one would be to strengthen the prohibitions on shark finning activities. When we passed the bill, I think it was back in 2011, there was an exemption if you were to have a shark fin from a certain date, but then folks were saying that all of theirs were at that certain date. We're going to be removing that exemption for that date. And again, we had this out last year. I think it was also Senator Ranker, but it did not pass through the legislative session. So we're incorporating that one back in. Another piece of it would be to create a crime for possessing wildlife in Washington that was illegally taken in another state. We have one that provides penalty for different activities with wild rehabbers. And then finally, refining definitions and statutes for commercial fish and shellfish operations for their accounting. So this one also has a little bit of a fiscal note. We're thinking that because of the criminal wildlife penalties for the white sturgeon, green sturgeon, and the two salmon and sturgeon, we're estimating about $30,000 per year, which we would receive as revenue, and that would also go into the enforcement reward account. So there's a lot of moving pieces on this, but again, a lot of it's a lot of technical changes as well. So,
Commissioner Mankin.
Could you explain in a little more detail what unlawful wildlife rehabilitation is? Unlawful wildlife rehabilitation.
Oh, sure. So if someone were taking care of an animal without the proper permits, we have our wildlife, the approved, there's different permits for wildlife rehab facilities. There's different paperwork that they need to do, documentation. So it's, for example, if you were to have someone that's just trying to take care of, they're not a wildlife rehabber themselves to take care of an animal, that's not a lawful activity for, like, finds an animal on the side of the road kind of thing. It's along that line, but I can get you some more information. I kind of hope Chief Bjork would have stuck around.
So there are no penalties for that now?
I'm not sure if there are no penalties right now. I'll get you more information. Yep. Any other questions? Okay, the next one is our wildlife conflict. And when I first saw the title of this, I sunk into my stomach.
Again.
But it's not another wolf bill. And this one is on pages 126 and 131 of your packet. So what we have right now, the problem is with population growing, we have increased interactions between people and wildlife. We did have the passage of our wolf bill, which brought in some monies, and it also brought in some new authorities. But unfortunately, there's still some regulatory gaps that we needed to address. One of the things that wasn't handled through last year is any kind of funding for other large carnivores. So we've got money for wolves now, but we don't for cougars or bears. And then also in 2009, if you're looking at 7736 RCW, the legislature actually states that they want the department to come back and bring recommendations to, after having that for a couple years, what our recommendations are, to bring that back to the legislature. So what we're proposing is doing modifications in 7736. First of all, we're proposing to create a new independent non-appropriated account, a wildlife conflict account, and that would be used for payment of deer, elk, and large carnivores. Okay? It would set a new limit asking for a $50,000 general fund appropriation to pay for bear and cougar damage. And any of those monies that didn't get expended would roll over and go into this wildlife conflict account. So kind of similar how we did our wolf. We had a wolf account, wolf livestock account. Monies are to roll over each year, and then they can be expended at a later date if we didn't use all of the money, so that we kind of accrue a balance. We also have two accounts already that are being appropriated for deer and elk damage, and those are coming from both the state wildlife account as well as the general fund. There's a small modification that would take any extra monies that aren't being spent and rolling those over into this new wildlife account to create that balance. And then finally, for this wildlife account, it's going to be used for future uses of mitigation, for proactive measures, for assessment, and then different payments of claims as well. So does that make sense? It's really more of an accounting, or a bill that deals with the current accounts that we have for wildlife conflict. So the fiscal impact on this bill, as I'd mentioned, is really just for the general fund appropriation of $50,000, and that's to pay for a large carnivore payments for livestock depredation from cougar and bear. Yep. And finally, we have our hunter education bill. This one was a tough one. We came so close to getting this on those final days. I think it was 2 hours before the final cutoff. We had a negotiated product, and we just couldn't get it. They didn't want to jam the caucus with all of the new changes that we had. I was actually helping write the bill in the back caucus rooms, and we had cut off within 2 hours, so we were so close. But it was a little bit of a watered-down version, so rather than, because this is going to go back to the House, I think it might be best to just drop a brand new bill with some of the changes that the legislature put in this last session. So what the problem is right now, if you all recall, our young hunters can go hunting without supervision. Also, our current hunter education course is free, so we have a lot of hunters that are registering for several classes but not attending those. So with those no-shows, we have empty seats. And again, we only have so many classes through the state. With those no-show seats, there are people that are waiting in line to get into these hunter education classes. And then we also have a situation happening where some of our hunter education folks are charging, or not charging, they're asking for volunteer donation, but that's contrary to our policy. And those voluntary donations start to help pay for those classes. So what we'd like to do, kind of the same solution as we had last session, we'd like to modify RCW 7732 to set minimum age requirements for hunters at the age of 8, and then also have a minimum age requirement from 8 to 14 where you'd have to be accompanied by an adult. However, there is a provision that would state that if you are on your own property, you're less likely to encounter other hunters and you would not need adult supervision if it was property that you did own. And that was actually really, a lot of the legislators liked that piece of it. And then finally, it's the fees. We're looking to actually bring in some funding for our hunter education fee and also to deter folks from, have a $20 fee for hunter education and then a $10 fee for reissuing your certification. So if you lost it, then you have an administrative fee of $10. So again, one of the things that I have some, you know, I'm not really sure what's going to happen with this. We had on the Washington Coalition side, which is predominantly Republicans, they pulled the fees out of it towards that final negotiation. On the House side, they pulled out some of the minimum wage requirements. So, I mean, it was this back and forth. I think the product we had was pretty good. We just need to address a few outstanding concerns from the senators. Senator Pearson, who's the chair of the Senate Natural Resource Committee, has committed to do a work session up, I think, in your neck of the woods, I think in another month or so. So we'll see a work session on hunter education to hopefully kind of address those concerns. But we'll see what the legislature does with it. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Smith.
Thank you. Was there any anti-hunting sentiment that amongst the legislatures regarding this bill?
By anti...
I'm thinking, and maybe I'm off base on this, that there are folks out there that just don't like hunting.
Sure.
Don't approve of hunting.
Sure.
And that this would be viewed by that sector or those individuals as perpetuating an activity that they find offensive.
Sure.
And if that sort of flavor jaded any of the discussions.
Yeah, I think so. When I talked about this bill, I kind of talked about it in terms of a public safety bill. And it really is. Right now, you can have a small child going out on their own without any adult supervision. So those minimum age requirements are, you know, an important thing. And I think folks that right now without any age requirements actually preferred to see that level of age requirement put back in. I didn't get that at all. Really.
Most states do have an age requirement,
yeah.
Right?
So, and in fact, ours was omitted. I think from last year, I might have mentioned it. It was accidentally omitted, that section. So it was dropped and we never got it back. So the legislative discussion has been putting that age requirement back up to 18, you know, to 10, to 8. Mm-hmm. But I think for the most part, 8 was a good, 14 to 8 was a good age requirement that I think most folks rallied around. So, and this does have a fiscal impact on it too. The fees would raise about a quarter of $1 million per year. So,
Commissioner Kehoe?
Yes, thank you. Chairman Weicker, the bill that you have now, does it have acceptance by the hunting community?
It does.
Folks? Okay, yeah. So you're ready to drop this bill as is next session, or maybe drop a new bill with all
yeah,
the changes?
I think we could either go, so House Bill 1199 was the bill from last year. We could either go with that bill, but that puts us, it's Representative Blake's bill. It starts back off in the House and would need to come back over to the Senate, who stripped the fees out. So it's kind of just talking with Senator Pearson, who's in charge of that committee where it'll be heard, what he'd like to do as far as strategy moving this bill forward. I think both he and Senator Schessler were committed to get something to move forward. They worked very closely, as I'd mentioned, and those final hours, we just couldn't get it across the finish line. So, but with that, any other questions?
No. Commissioner Schmitten.
Thank you, Chair, and fabulous job, both in the general and in the special session. I think the results are proof of that. The Columbia River Recreational Fisheries Endorsement Act sunsets next year, and I know it's not legislation, but it requires legislative action. Have you begun to think about a game plan This is contributing about $1.5 million a year to the department, and I think it's never too early to get started on a sunsetted piece of legislation.
If I recall, it was 2015 that it sunsetted?
I thought it was 14.
I'll have to check.
This year. I think it's the fifth year.
Okay.
We made that mistake last year thinking it was this year, but I think it is 14.
Okay, I'll double check on that.
Please.
Okay. Other questions, comments? It's going to be another. Yes, Deputy Director Storr.
I just wanted to get back to Commissioner Mankin on his question on the omnibus bill and the rehab piece. Looks to me like there isn't a penalty, an existing penalty for rehabbers. This establishes a gross misdemeanor for certain activities that a rehab person might be doing illegally, and it defines those activities too. So.
Sure. And were there any other alternatives for penalizing those who would sign up for more than one Hunter Ed class considered? Were there other ways other than charging to attend fees? Because we just heard during the deputy director's report that the average cost of hunting license has increased. Right. Now we're charging hunters a significant amount more than fishers for the privilege. So I can understand why there's, you know, getting to be real resistance. We're seeing a decline in purchase of hunting licenses. So this is a tough issue, creating even more of an economic barrier to entry into the hunting sports. So I really empathize, but have we thought of anything, any other way to assure that people don't sign up for more than one? Are they real serious if they...
And that's the challenge, is how do you hold someone accountable without some level of penalty?
What about penalizing for overbooking just on the next license purchased? Like we do penalize for not returning catch record cards?
And I don't have the exact statistic, but there is a large percentage, and if I recall, it's over 50%, that actually don't even get a hunting license. They're using the hunter education course primarily for gun safety class. Uh-huh. And so with that being offered free through the state, it's hard to tie it directly to a hunting license. And I know also in talking about like lowering the amount, the cost to administer the program gets to be a point where that point of no return. It's not.
Yeah.
So, but something to think about for sure.
Okay. Thanks. All right. Well, are you going to take a vacation?
I have family in town right now, so I don't know if that's a vacation, but I've taken days off. So,
we'll do it quick. The next round's starting.
All right. Thank you.
Great job. Fabulous job. Now, how long have you been our legislative liaison?
I'll be going on fourth session this one.
So again, time is flying, isn't it?
But it's not like it's been three sessions. There'll be three sessions each year, sometimes four if I'm really lucky. So. I was really lucky with this special session business. So. Thank you.
Great. Thanks.